I try to put sort of roadblocks in my creative path to stop me from reaching for the normal things. And then I feel like that's sometimes the source of the unexpected.
Hello, everyone. Our next guest on We Need to Talk with Oscar has worked on features like Hot Summer Nights or Last Year's Dumb Money, and on TV shows like Unbelievable, The Magicians, or Class of 09. Today, we are going to talk about his second collaboration with director Michael Mohan, who he has previously worked with on The Warriors and now Neon's Immaculate, starring Sydney Sweeney. Please welcome composer Will Bates. Hi, Will. How is it going?
Hi. I'm good, thanks. Thank you for having me.
We usually start our interviews by asking our guests about their core memories that either made them fall in love with films in general or made them go into filmmaking. Can you recall a moment or period in your life which you can attribute one of these feelings or decisions to?
Sure. Blimey, that's a good question. I think for me, wanting to become a film composer is something that happened in my childhood. I think I was 6 or 7 years old when I realized one morning that John Williams, that one person had written all of these pieces of music that I've been humming along to throughout my childhood. And I think a light bulb went off and it was like, wow, that's just one person that did all of that. It kind of blew my mind. And, I attribute a lot of what I wanted to do because of him. And then I sang the whole of Star Wars to my parents, like from start to finish. And they were kind of like, uh-oh, he seems like he needs an instrument to learn. So they bought me a violin and I tortured them with that for a while. Yeah, I would say that's probably my thing, my moment.
And now on to Immaculate, which I think we'll have an unusually easy time talking about, since even though the runtime is relatively short, we get to hear a great amount and wide variety of music. Is this something that you are aware of before starting working on it? Like Michael tells you that, okay, we will need a great amount of music, or you prepare a decent amount and then hope for the most to be used later on?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's funny. I think there were a certain amount of tasks with this movie that needed to be completed before I really started the score. There's a lot of music that needed to be recorded on camera. So I had to write certain pieces while they were filming. But I think that when we first got to post, we're all very sensitive of the use of music. I think music is such a powerful tool that you have to wield it carefully. And I tend to come normally instinctually from a place where I prefer it to have a light touch. And I think Michael Mohan is very similar in that way. But for whatever reason, when we just started getting into the post, it just seemed like we had somehow stumbled on this palette of sound that really seemed to work with the film. And we just kind of kept scoring scenes. It just seemed like, you know, there would be a moment where I'd be like, yeah, this should be dry. And then I'd write a cue for another scene and be like, oh, that works really well though. Why don't we try something like that over here? And it just kind of grew that way. But really those first tasks, I won't be giving anything away by explaining this. There's an early moment in the film that you might remember where the nuns are singing in a chapel and they're singing this hymn. And I needed to write this piece of music for them for on camera. So I wrote this mass in Latin, this Te Deum thing. And that the process of creating that kind of then bled into the rest of the score and really allowed us to sort of start to create our own palette of sound. So I think a lot of what happened with the scoring happened because of having to write those initial pieces. And there's also like a moment where a trio of nuns are playing an instrumental piece when Sister Cecilia, Sydney's character, arrives at the convent for the first time. Mike didn't even know what kind of instruments they should be playing. So he's kind of like, what do you think they should be? I'm like, what about a zither and a hurdy-gurdy and a psaltery? And be like, okay, great. And he like sent the props guy off in Rome to find all those instruments. And then I guess I had to go and find them myself as well. And I started writing sketches with them, but it was a lovely way of being involved in production, which, you know, most of the time composers aren't that involved. It was a rare occasion to be kind of influential in those decisions. And also just for me to have a starting point of where to go with the score was great, and a great beginning of our conversation, I guess.
I saw that just last night there was a showing of the film in a literal church in attendance mm-hmm. with Sydney and Michael. I mean, first of all, that's really something, fun idea. And the setting is a familiar one in the religious world, plus filmmaking and especially horror is so much about homages. Did you have any personal inspirations, and were there any that were given straight from Michael that here I want to reach a little bit and here?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I think that the whole tone of the film is steeped in a sense of traditions that you're familiar with, but then are kind of flipped upside down. And I think the same thing is happening with the music. And again, going back to that first thing that he asked me to write, Michael was brought up Catholic. I mean, my father was Catholic. I've been around the kind of iconography, I guess, as we all have, I'm sure. But he wasn't familiar with some of the Latin texts that I was like, what about this thing called a Te Deum? He's like, what's a Te Deum? I explained it's like a kind of exaltation to God. It's a set Latin text that's been around for over 1,000 years that's been set to music many times. And I used that as the piece of music for this particular scene. But the idea was always like, let's have this thing that is familiar, but let's flip it slightly and turn it upside down and make it feel a little bit off, because that is the idea of this corner of the Catholic Church that Sydney's character finds herself in, that there it is like initially she's in awe of it. She's sort of bringing this feeling of majesty that she has for her religion. But then as an audience, we start to understand that all is not well, you know. So Mike wanted that to be reflected in the music a little bit. Funnily enough, the instrument that I used to write that piece is a Hungarian instrument. It's a Hungarian zither. I wish I had it here. I'm in my home studio today, but it's in my other studio in North Hollywood. It's a beautiful instrument with, I don't know, 40 strings on it, and it has a very unusual scale.
Yeah, it was so familiar.
Right, for you probably. as a Hungarian. Yeah, I mean, it was a really interesting way for me to start to write melodies. It's something that I wasn't familiar with. So I feel like his composers were always doing that, always trying to find a thing or a combination of instruments that is unusual. And for me, I tend to do those things to make me not write in the way that I would normally in front of a piano, let's say. So I wrote the piece on that instrument and then like set it for a choir and for organ and stuff. But yeah, there's a lot of like, I try to put sort of roadblocks in my creative path to stop me from reaching for the normal things. And then I feel like that's sometimes the source of the unexpected. And in that case, it was that instrument, which is kind of funny.
I actually have a question in connection with unusual instrument choices, because I know how much people hate when they are asked about their favorites out of their own work. So I'm not going to ask you anything like that. However, what I am going to ask you is, what's an instrument or even a sound that isn't one of the most usually thought of, but horror-wise and more specifically in Immaculate, they definitely make the hair on the back of your neck stand up?
Yeah, good. That's nice to hear. You know, one of the lovely things about horror is that you really get to experiment with sound. And I think especially someone like Michael, who's so open to ideas and so encouraging and enthusiastic, I really was able to kind of experiment with weird stuff. There's the whole first act of the film, the cold open, I guess you could call it, which is quite a unnerving, shocking sequence, if you remember. All of that is scored using... My wife has been going to these estate sales here in LA quite a lot, like where there's like someone's died and people come in and they like try to strip the house of all its stuff. And There's always a lot of antique dealers at those kinds of things, but we just have been going because it's kind of interesting. We went to one recently and there was a piano sitting in the corner, and the lady who was running the estate sale was like, yeah, that piano is free, but we can't figure out how to get it out of here because it's too massive. And we're just going to take a chainsaw to it tomorrow if no one takes it. And I was just like, oh my God. And it's this 19th century square grand piano. It's kind of was invented right before they figured out how to put piano harps vertically. So this one, it's like a pair of harps and they're horizontal. It's massive. And anyway, I found a guy who like got it out of there and we brought it back to our house. And I had a piano tuner come and look at it. And he was like, this thing is amazing, belongs in a museum. There's no way you'll ever be able to tune it. It'll just break. And I was like, okay, fine, whatever. So I started using it on Immaculate and I started putting Ebos on it. The thing about it being arranged that way is that it's very easy to kind of do experimental things with it. And like I'm scraping my fingernails along the strings. I'm hammering it with hammers. I'm putting Ebos, which are like little, I don't know if you're familiar with what those are. You normally use them on a guitar. It's like a tiny little battery powered electromagnetic device.
Yep.
If you was putting a bunch of them around the piano, it's so the whole thing is resonating. It's really fun. And the whole first section of the movie is scored using that thing. And I'm not sure if I can ever use this piano ever again. It's to me, I identify it so much now with Immaculate that it's like, I don't know what to do with it because I can't get rid of it. Because I feel like I saved its life, but now it's like stuck in our garage. This giant beast. It's like the size of a small car. Yeah, so that's, I think for this movie, that has a certain amount of personal connection with me. Also, there's a lot of hurdy-gurdy, which I was playing last night at that church that you're talking about. Me and the singer, Maya Mansa, were performing one of the cues from the film. I was on hurdy-gurdy. My assistant, Eric Lutz, was playing the church organ. But the hurdy-gurdy's are interesting and slightly freaky device, you know, hand-cranked string machine. So that's a useful tool to kind of reach for instead of like violins and stuff. Yeah.
I'm so glad that I asked it because it's so fascinating.
Yeah. It's, like I said, it's horror, you know, it's fun. It's like, I can really, and I told this story to Mohan when I bought the square grand. Also, one little detail about this piano is that as I was picking it up, the estate sale person was like, oh yeah, by the way, it was owned by General Phineas Banning, who is the guy that designed Long Beach. He designed the port in LA. Like he has a museum, the Banning Museum, which is like also near the beach, Long Beach. And I told this to Mohan and he was like looking him up. He's like, when did you record this piano? When did you do all the stuff to it? And I'm like, oh, I did it yesterday. So yesterday was General Phineas Banning's birthday. That's kind of freaky. I'm like, oh, the ghost of General Phineas is in this movie somehow. So yeah, I thought that was a good detail.
It really is. And the inclusion of choirs in a project like this is more than obvious. However, what I was surprised by is the not so overwhelming number or amount of them. But I would say this surprise was a welcome one. How much thought went into this aspect? Of course, it was intentional, but did you actually think about the fact that, okay, of course we'll have it, but not that much?
Yeah, I tend to always be that way anyway when it comes to orchestration. Like if I'm doing something using strings, it tends to be a quartet or a quintet. I tend not to go for the big massive hit you over the head sound. And I think the same thought went into the choir. Plus, there was something very, very sort of clear, which was that they, when I did that initial recording, when you look at the scene, there's actually only about 20 nuns in that scene anyways. It kind of was like, oh, well, I have to match what's on the screen. And then later on in the movie, we called it the chamber choir. There was like this sort of, there was the larger hall with all of the members of the convent. And then there was this sort of like the kind of elite team of singers that you see later on in the film during that when things start to kind of really accelerate, let's say. Yeah. That, you know, there's like a sort of horseshoe of them singing. And I think that was an intentional decision from Mike as well to kind of have them be the sort of expert singers. But I liked that. I like it when you can like almost pinpoint individual voices rather than like just being a wall of sound. It seems to make more sense. And I think it's slightly eerier as well, and something slightly more sinister as well.
Thanks to, of course, the setting, incorporating medieval Italian elements and instruments is another detail I truly enjoyed. Can you shed some light on the process that led to the final result in regard to this specifically?
Yeah. I guess, again, it kind of came very specifically to that very first scene when she arrives at the convent and she's in the piazza. This idea of it being kind of early music choices that I think in a way Michael wanted to have this notion that the convent has been sort of somewhat abandoned by the main Catholic Church, right? That it's sort of slightly stuck in time. And I think that was sort of the reason that we would, rather than it being, there are some organs and whatnot in there, but I liked the idea that it's more basic, it's more Baroque than that. There were like, there's a harpsichord in one shot when they're having dinner. There's the nuns are playing a psaltery, which is like a very sort of primitive instrument. So I think again it's this idea that it's a little bit of an unusual sect of the Catholic Church, and I think that they just kind of continue to use this technology and these instruments because that's what they know, you know. So I think that was really the decision there, and I think again it's something that we're familiar with, but it's easier to kind of twist it slightly and make it just seem a little bit off. Like, what's going on here? Why is this way? So kind of presenting the idea. And, you know, everything was really from Cecilia's point of view. That was another important decision. Like, are we as an audience participating in what we're observing, or are we seeing everything from her POV? And I think that this idea of like, when she arrives and it's kind of magical, it's familiar but slightly unfamiliar, is like was really important, so that we're kind of sharing the experience with her.
Including all these, we even get to hear some playfulness in the music. In, for example, in the start that you just mentioned, which completes the story it tells. For example, at the start, when Cecilia is shown around the convent,
right.
or at times there are these little, I don't know, music books like melodies playing. And this, of course, has some consequences to the story itself, such as the audience easing up and becoming more unaware, vulnerable. My question would be a bit in regard to this, and to stop with just covered before, do you ever surprise yourself, even yourself, when working on a project with the routes you're taking?
Yeah, I think so. It's like any kind of art, you sit and think that you're going to do it a certain way, and as soon as you start to experiment with a process, you find yourself taking a completely different avenue. I will say that tour cue when Cecilia is shown around the convent, I think of all of the cues in the movie, that was probably the hardest one. It's complicated what's going on. It's like, it's playful, but at the same time, in that moment, we've just had all of that dark stuff, right, in the beginning. And so we as an audience know that this place is somewhat sinister, and yet we have to see everything through Cecilia's perspective, that it's, you know, somewhat playful, somewhat magical. So we definitely went backwards and forwards on how to really attach the tone of that one. But in the end, going for something that's kind of more neutral and lighter seemed to make more sense. But yeah, I think that the ideas were always like this sense of magic almost, and majesty and awe that she has at the beginning. And I often find myself using melody to do that, because melody can so easily be thrown into a different context. So there's this kind of melody for the sort of more magical side of the convent that is then completely flipped upside down with different accompaniment to make it much darker as the movie progresses. So you can kind of have these like signposts, these story signposts, but they're being like thrown into a darker light later on. And I guess like at the beginning of a project for me, that those are the things that I have to find before I can move forward. I have to be able to find those melodies and have this, what I always call this kind of eureka moment, where it's like, ah, that's it. That's the that's the melody. Now I can use that as a tool and I can kind of change it and make its colors feel different depending on where we are in the story. So yeah, that's the sort of thing that I like torture myself over, I guess, like the melodic aspect of getting the story right.
A bit of a jump from me from the start to the end, because what to play after the already by now much talked about final scene must have been quite a challenge, because honestly, there isn't much left to say at that point, or you would just about do anything to let go.
Right.
How did you find the right stuff in order to leave, not on a good note, but on the perfect note for the film itself, for the story itself?
Again, I think that we experimented with a few different ideas here. Like, do we carry on with the lingering sense of shock, or do we just flip it upside down? And I think the latter worked very successfully. And I don't know if I'm going to give anything away here, but the Ave Maria, the arrangement that I made of that piece, I mean, the original recording was done by this wonderful choir in London, actually, called the High Low Singers. They sang the Ave Maria in the scene that's in the movie. And then I thought, like, oh, I'll take that. And then I orchestrated it with Ondes Martinet, which is a French, it's a recreation of a very famous 1920s French synthesizer. It's a bit like a theremin, and you sort of put this ring on your finger and you slide up and down the key bed with it. And the left hand, you're doing the velocity. And that's kind of, I thought that it's such a sort of ridiculous, but light and also very eerie way to accompany that choir. It just seemed to make sense. And the music box, and, you know, it, I think Mike just wanted it to be such a blip of also somewhat going back to the beginning of that feeling that Cecilia has when she's arriving in Rome. She still has a belief in God and everything. It's just this place that has kind of transformed everything. But it's that similar feeling of majesty, I guess, that we wanted to recapture with also a slightly ridiculous flip on it.
Will, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you.
Honestly, it's such a delight to hear someone talk about their work with such excitement. Thank you for taking the time.
It's a fun one to talk about. Great to chat. Thank you so much.
Thank you.